The Ulster Economics Podcast. The podcast that keeps you up to date with what is happening economy-wise in Northern Ireland. Telling you what you need to know, but not necessarily what you want to hear. It is better to be prepared for the economic environment we're operating in and not the world we would like to be in. Episode 12. Working 9 to 2. 2020 will be remembered for many things, but low energy prices is probably not one of them. Fuel costs have rocketed since then and are now centre stage within an evolving cost of living crisis. Those on universal credit, that's around 134,000 in Northern Ireland, are particularly vulnerable, having lost their temporary £20 per week uplift last month. Reduced income and rising costs are a nasty combo. Rishi Sunak's latest budget has improved things somewhat for those benefit claimants in work, with an increase in the national living wage and a reduction in the universal credit taper, whereby claimants will be able to keep more of their benefits if they work. Nevertheless, with consumer price inflation set to exceed wage increases for the majority of the workforce, an autumn and winter of discontent beckons. Further tax increases taking effect next April will add to the cost of living crisis. This income squeeze doesn't look to be transitory, and ultimately the only protection against a cost of living crisis is for wage growth to outpace that of inflation. But simply increasing wages without improvements in productivity is likely to lead to higher prices and no meaningful improvement in living standards. According to Paul Krugman, the 2008 winner of the Nobel Prize in Economics, productivity isn't everything, but in the long run, it is almost everything. A country's ability to improve its standard of living over time depends almost entirely on its ability to raise its output per worker. Productivity is back on the political agenda too. The word or derivatives of it were used 7 times by Boris Johnson in his Conservative Party conference speech last month. The Prime Minister bemoaned the UK economy's same old broken model with low wages, low growth and low productivity. And instead, he waxed lyrical about the need to move towards a high wage, high skilled and high productivity economy. Clearly this goal is easier said than done, and Boris Johnson's comments irked many commentators, with one economist describing the speech as economically illiterate. So what is productivity and why is it so important? The term productivity invariably turns a person cold, but its importance cannot be understated. Some businesses would prefer to use the term operational efficiency, but productivity is the main cause of economic growth and largely determines the long-term economic health of a nation. It helps define the scope for raising living standards and the competitiveness of an economy. Since 2008, weak growth in productivity has been labelled the UK's productivity puzzle. A slowdown in productivity has been a problem throughout advanced economies, but it has been particularly marked within the UK. Prior to the pandemic, UK productivity was some 20% below the level that would have occurred if the pre-global financial crisis rates of productivity had continued. Instead, the weakness in UK productivity that has occurred since a global financial crisis has been dubbed by the Royal Statistical Society as the statistic of the decade. So where is the UK in the productivity stakes? On average, UK workers are less productive than their peers within Italy, France, Germany and the US. Similarly, Northern Ireland workers' rates of productivity are well below their UK counterparts and are the lowest of all the UK regions. To illustrate this, let's assume a UK worker works from 9 to 6, Monday to Friday, with a one-hour lunch break. While a UK worker finishes at 6 p.m. on a Friday, their Italian equivalent would have produced the same level of output in monetary terms by 24 minutes past 2, just over 3.5 hours earlier. The French and US workers would have produced the UK workers' output by 6 minutes past 5 and 18 minutes past 5, respectively, on Thursday afternoon. Meanwhile, the most productive workers of all, the Germans, they would have left work at almost 3:30 on Thursday afternoon. So what about Northern Ireland? Where does it lie in the productivity stakes? Using the output per head measure, Northern Ireland is 20% below the UK average and around 20 to 25% below the Republic of Ireland average. As a result, in order to produce the same output as their peers in the UK, Northern Ireland's average worker would have to stay in work over the weekend and work until 10:45 on a Sunday morning. So Northern Ireland workers would have to work 7 days to match the output of their UK counterparts. Let's look at it another way. We've heard suggestions that certain employees in Belfast should move towards a four-day working week, with proponents arguing their productivity would improve if workers had more time off. Skeptics highlight that this flexibility is essentially working part-time for a full-time wage, and if Northern Ireland workers had the same level of productivity as their German counterparts, they could have a three-day working week. The average German produces in 3 days what the average Northern Ireland worker produces in a five-day, 40-hour week. Northern Ireland workers are 60% as productive as their German counterparts, so a German worker working from 9 to 2 would be producing the same amount as a Northern Ireland worker. There are a variety of reasons behind Northern Ireland's low levels of productivity. The industrial structure: Northern Ireland has a higher proportion of low productivity sectors, such as agriculture, and has a significantly lower concentration of high productivity sectors, such as business services. Also, if you look at in terms of enterprise, Northern Ireland has a lower rate of business startups compared to the UK average. And also, Northern Ireland has the highest proportion of public sector jobs within the UK. And that would be seen to be crimping entrepreneurial activity. When it comes to skills, Northern Ireland has a number of key skills weaknesses. Just over 16% of Northern Ireland's population have no qualifications whatsoever. That is double the UK average. And two-thirds of Northern Ireland's population have no tertiary education qualifications, such as a degree. That compares with 51% for the UK and just 48% for the Republic of Ireland. There's also evidence of a managerial skills gap, and Northern Ireland's preponderance of family-owned businesses are seen as being not as conducive to adapting the best managerial talent or practices. In terms of institutional and cultural issues, Northern Ireland's economic strategies have traditionally been very weak on delivering on productivity. Promoting jobs or bringing in salaries is viewed as more important than productivity itself. Slow decision-making within the public sector, planning and procurement, and infrastructure are also highlighted as issues which impact on productivity. When it comes to investment, there are investment deficits in terms of both government and business investment. In terms of government, Northern Ireland's spending on science and technology is way below what occurs in the UK. For every £100 the UK spends on science and technology, Northern Ireland just spends £43. There's also an underinvestment in business R&D and general underinvestment amongst Northern Ireland's SMEs. Indeed, Northern Ireland's SMEs have more deposits within the banks, the local banks, than they have loans for investment. And the problem with that is you reap what you sow, and Northern Ireland has been consistently underinvesting, and therefore it has been reaping low rates of economic growth as a result. Looking ahead, there are a number of productivity issues and challenges. If we think of the COVID-19 pandemic, people are undecided as whether the pandemic has been a productivity killer or a productivity enhancer. Clearly, it's a mixture of both. We have areas such as telemedicine, which have obviously benefited from technology and seen significant improvements in productivity. Businesses, likewise, will have seen something similar. The issue of working from home and the flexibility that that's offered, people are able to be more efficient and productive with their time, no longer having to spend hours on a commute, and instead that can be put to more productive use. But is that additional time being spent and for the benefit of their employers and work, or is it spent on themselves and in terms of making them more efficient and productive, whether it's with their childcare or their own household arrangements? A key issue is going to be the legacy for school children. As mentioned earlier, Northern Ireland suffers from a significant level of underachievement within amongst school leavers. And given the missed education throughout the pandemic and various lockdowns, we could expect to see this weakness in Northern Ireland actually deteriorate with an epidemic of educational underachievement in the years to come. It is interesting to note that within the UK and the home nations, that the amount of spending for pupils for catch-up or recovery from COVID varies between £200 to £400 per pupil. This is from research from the Institute of Fiscal Studies, yet that pales into insignificance when compared with £1,800 per pupil in the US and £2,100 in the Netherlands. Brexit and the cost of doing business are also going to be issues, with erecting trade barriers, rolling out more red tape and bureaucracy undoubtedly will hit productivity. Business incentives to invest, there should now is the time to invest, given that the government has the various incentives such as the huge super deduction on capital allowances, and it is basically now, it's a case of now or never for many firms in terms of the attractiveness to invest. But Northern Ireland banks have seen more and more of SME deposits park with them, and the level of deposits exceeds the level of loans that have been granted to firms, local firms, for investment in plant and machinery. There's also the issue of investing in training, with the era of the so-called Great Resignation, where 40% of workers are expected to leave their jobs this year, or it's also dubbed the Great Attrition. Staff turnover is high, and arguably staff loyalty amongst many businesses is very low. Will firms invest in their staff, given that their staff may leave the firm to work for another firm? Even those staff who are satisfied with their employers now, they have the opportunities through working from home and the increase in the number of location-agnostic jobs to seek out opportunities elsewhere. With the cost of living squeeze set to intensify, it is important that the Northern Ireland businesses and public sector institutions look to squeeze out more improvements in productivity in the years ahead. Okay, so turning to some of the survey news, KPMG's CEO outlook for 2021 revealed a marked improvement in the outlook relative to last year. Confidence among Northern Ireland CEOs is almost back to pre-pandemic levels. 72% of local CEOs surveyed are optimistic about local growth prospects. That's taken a three-year horizon, and that is up from 44% last year. Almost two-thirds of local CEOs are also confident about global growth over the next 3 years, and that is up from 28% in 2020. The KPMG survey also notes that there has been a significant rowing back amongst Northern Ireland CEOs with their plans to downsize their office space. Last year, almost three-quarters expected to reduce their office footprint due to the pandemic, but this year, only 16% of CEOs have such plans. Flexible working and working from home is here to stay, but not at the extreme lockdown levels witnessed over the last 18 months. Some 44% of Northern Ireland CEOs said that most of their employees would be working remotely at least two or more days per week. Northern Ireland Chamber of Commerce survey for Q3 highlights that Northern Ireland's business recovery risked losing momentum as price pressures mount. Business performance is broadly split into three categories. A third are performing worse than before the pandemic, one third are performing around the same, and one third are performing better. For those performing worse, one in five do not believe that their business will recover from the impact of the pandemic. Inflationary pressures are a major concern, with 58% of firms witnessing cost rises of 6% or more, with over 60% of Northern Ireland firms expecting to increase prices over the next 3 months. Again, that's a record high. Some 69% of firms in Northern Ireland also expect to raise wages in the next 6 months. Turning to then the PMI for September, according to the Ulster Bank Northern Ireland PMI, private sector output accelerated in September relative to August, with a PMI reading of 54.0. This compares unfavourably with the 54.7 and 61.5 PMI readings for the UK and Republic of Ireland, respectively. Expectations for output in 12 months' time also improved for Northern Ireland, but incoming work continues to be disrupted with ongoing supply chain difficulties. Northern Ireland's new orders index fell in September for the first time in 6 months. Improvements in business conditions in Northern Ireland were sector-specific, with manufacturing and services firms posting strong rates of growth in output, 57.6 for manufacturing and 56 for services. Conversely, construction and retail saw activity fall, and both sectors remain pessimistic about output put for a year ahead. The outlook remains challenging on two fronts. Firstly, inflationary pressures are intensifying. Local firms reported record rises in input costs and are also raising the prices of their goods and services at the fastest pace in the survey's history. And this reflects the experience of businesses last month before the more recent surge in energy prices has taken place. Secondly, supply chains remain under stress, with supplier delivery times lengthening significantly in September relative to August. This is most acute within retail, and this will present challenges for consumers and business ahead of Christmas. Turning to north-south trade, many areas of the Northern Ireland economy are struggling to return to pre-pandemic levels of activity, but north-south trade isn't one of them. Following Brexit and the Northern Ireland Protocol, the volume of trade moving in both directions on the island of Ireland has been on the rise. The latest statistics from the Central Statistics Office in Dublin report that exports from Northern Ireland to the Republic of Ireland increased by 51% year-on-year in August. Taking the first 8 months of the year, goods trade valued at €2.5 billion flowed from north to south, and that represented an increase of 61% year on year. Meanwhile, goods trade moving in the opposite direction, that's south to north, increased by 47% or over €700 million relative to the period January to August last year. The gains in trade between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland appear to be at the expense of Great Britain. Great Britain has seen its exports to the Republic of Ireland fall by 30% year to date relative to January to August 2020. That's a fall of almost €3.2 billion. No timely Northern Ireland GB data currently exists, but trade volumes are expected to have fallen. Indeed, the Northern Ireland Chamber of Commerce latest survey for Q3 revealed that 28% of local firms are buying less from GB, with only 9% purchasing more. Interestingly, despite the increase in trade volumes from north to south with the CSO data, the Northern Ireland Chamber survey reports that 1 in 4 of Northern Ireland firms are selling less to the Republic of Ireland market since the new EU trading arrangements came into force. Turning to the labour market, with the labour market continuing to show signs of recovery, the latest batch of labour market data from NISRA had a familiar ring to them. Despite the end of the furlough scheme looming, proposed redundancies in Northern Ireland remain muted in September, and there appears to be no shortage of jobs, with the number on the local payrolls hitting another record high of 765,600 last month. That's over 12,000 or 1.6% above the pre-pandemic high in March 2020, and it represents the largest rise in payroll growth of all 12 UK regions relative to the pre-pandemic levels. But Northern Ireland's self-employment levels, they remain further below pre-pandemic levels than any other UK region. So Northern Ireland's labour market has truly weathered its biggest economic storm to date. 18 months ago, a double-digit or above 10% unemployment rate looked to be a slam-dunk outcome. Not so with the unemployment rate, maybe on the rise, but up 4.1% for the 3 months to August. It isn't a rate to be worried about. Instead, rates of pay will move centre stage in the evolving cost of living crisis, and this will affect those in work as well as the unemployed. A modest rise in unemployment is now expected rather than the spike anticipated over a year ago. The unprecedented actions by the UK government, not least through the introduction of the job retention scheme, prevented a pandemic turning into an economic depression. The job retention scheme, or furlough scheme, served the economy well by retaining jobs during the lockdowns and throughout the worst stages of the pandemic. Following a vaccine rollout and a lifting of restrictions, the so-called furlough scheme expired on the 30th of September, and as of the 31st of August, the latest data available, there were 29,700 jobs on furlough in Northern Ireland, with a 50-50 split between full and partial furlough. It remains to be seen whether these furloughed individuals migrate to another job, unemployment, or become economically inactive. For those individuals still on furlough last month, the prospects of finding a job, albeit not necessarily the exact or ideal job sought, could not be better. Skills shortages are everywhere. Vacancies in the UK have hit a 20-year high of over 1.1 million, and it's a similar picture in Northern Ireland, with job listings hitting a record high in the third quarter. According to the latest nijobs.com jobs report, Advertised vacancies posted their fifth consecutive quarterly rise in Q3 with a 14% quarter-on-quarter increase. Demand for labour in the third quarter is almost six times the level reported during Q2 2020's lockdown low. Looking at the year to date, that's January to September, job listings have increased by over 50% relative to the corresponding period in 2019, which predated the pandemic. Skill shortages are evident the length and breadth of the economy, with 24 of the 31 employment categories within the nijobs.com report increasing their number of listings in Q3 relative to the previous quarter. Just under half of all the employment categories recorded their highest number of vacancies to date, and these included nursing, healthcare and medical, IT, hospitality, retailing, wholesaling and purchasing, alongside accountancy and finance. The performance of some categories is worth noting. Nursing, healthcare and medical remains the top category for recruitment and accounted for almost one in five of all jobs listed. After nursing and healthcare and medical, hospitality was the most active employment category, accounting for almost one in eight of all vacancies and one third of the quarterly increase in listings in the latest quarter. Hospitality vacancies jumped by 44% in the third quarter, and that is 2.5 times the number listed in Q3 2019. This highlights the churn that the industry has experienced, with many workers leaving the sector to work elsewhere. The ongoing skill shortages have triggered inflation-busting pay increases in some areas. Pay has become an even more sensitive topic given the evolving costs of living crises. Most workers are likely to see pay fail to keep up with the rising cost of living, and this has implications for employers' ability to attract and retain staff in what is a seller's market. The cost of living crisis provides fresh impetus into financial remuneration considerations associated with work. With income squeeze, the demand for more significant pay rises from employers will intensify. For some sectors, such as the hospitality sector, which already faced a bumpy road to recovery, rising wage and energy cost pressures present a significant challenge. For workers, moving jobs may be their only way to secure a meaningful pay rise in the face of the rising cost of living. As a result, we can expect the recruitment market to remain very active in the months ahead. The Northern Ireland Chamber of Commerce survey also highlighted that skills shortages intensified in the third quarter, with two-thirds of firms trying to recruit, with 80% of those firms experiencing recruitment difficulties. Over 40% of local firms expect to deliver above inflation pay rises. With the economy reopened, the incoming hotel occupancy figures continue to improve, with occupancy rates closing in on pre-pandemic levels in August. Following a room occupancy rate of 53% in May, 57% in June, 62% in July, August posted an encouraging 78% occupancy rate. That marked the highest room occupancy rate since August 2019, when 82% of Northern Ireland's hotel rooms were occupied. Incidentally, 88% is the record occupancy for August, and that was achieved in 2016 and 2017. Northern Ireland's hotels reported over 223,000 rooms sold in August, and that is almost six times the total for May, which was the first month of reopening, and it is now only 3% below the pre-pandemic room sales recorded in August 2019. Looking at consumer spending in the housing market, 2020 saw the number of new car sales in Northern Ireland plummet by 30% year on year to a series low. A post-lockdown recovery began in the second half of last year, but supply chain disruptions have acted as a handbrake on the recovery ever since. And we've seen throughout 2021, local dealers have posted some of their weakest months of sales on record. September has been no exception, with just 3,449 new cars sold. That was down a third below 2019's pre-pandemic figure, and it's the weakest September on record. With just 3 months remaining, 2021 could well undershoot last year's record low in car sales. Looking at the property market, Northern Ireland's residential transactions from the HMRC for September revealed another bumper month for estate agents. 3,830 sales in September represents a rise of 68% relative to September 2020. The latest figures also mark the second best month for sales since June 2007, and September 2021 was also the best September since 2006. If we look at the year-to-date in residential property transactions for the period January to September, sales of almost 31,400 represent the best year for sales since the corresponding period back in 2007. Sales during the first 9 months of the year almost doubled year on year and are now up one third relative to January to September 2019. We can, however, expect to see a correction in sales volumes in 2022. Looking at the non-residential market, which is commercial and industrial transactions, there were just 300 sales in September, which marked a rise of 36% year on year and 11% above September 2019 levels. And if we look at the first 9 months of the year, transactions have rebounded by 53% year on year, and that marked the highest number of transactions for the January to September period since 2007. So looking ahead to the month of November, it's going to be very much more of the same. Themes are going to be slower growth, higher rates of inflation, mounting cost pressures for business and households. Indeed, today we've already seen a couple of electricity suppliers increasing their prices from the start of December. Inflation is very much going to be the theme that households and businesses are going to be watching, most notably energy costs. And we're likely to see in our petrol station forecourts those prices of petrol and diesel moving closer towards the 150 pence per litre mark. In terms of the labour market, the furlough scheme has ended, and we should later in the month get the final figure for how many jobs were on furlough at the end of September when it ended. The next couple of weeks is going to see green issues and climate change centre stage on the agenda with the COP26 conference. But probably the key event during the month of November is going to be next week's Bank of England Monetary Policy Committee session, where financial markets have been pricing in an interest rate hike as early as next week. And while this remains a possibility, I don't think you should bet on it, and it may be more likely that the Bank of England is going to sit on its hands until the new year, and we will see the first hike in interest rates in 2022. I am Richard Ramsey. This is the Ulster Economics Podcast, episode 12, Working 9 to 2, October 2021 edition. You can stay up to date by following us on social media or online on the ulstereconomics.com blog site.